Hello, this is a Christian Science Extemporaneous Prayer Treatment by the Mary Baker Eddy Institute, website mbeinstitute.org. The title to this prayer treatment is 0-7, Contagious, True and False. Mary Baker Eddy is the discoverer, founder, and leader of Christian Science. She provided the world a book entitled Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. She referred to it as the textbook of Christian Science. It will be referred to in the same way in this prayer treatment. At the beginning of the textbook are three introductory quotes. 1. Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Jesus, quoted by John. 2. There is nothing, either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. Shakespeare. 3. Oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. This is thy high behest. Thou here and everywhere. Mary Baker Eddy. In any kind of research or study that one does, the first quote, which are the words of Jesus about truth, certainly would be helpful to be our guide. And the second quote, advising us that how we think about anything and everything is embedding into our consciousness that is the truth. If we truly understand that, it leads us to an ironclad decision to be abiding by the first quote from Jesus to the very best of our present understanding. It is much easier to abide with what is in consciousness than it is to modify it, replace it, reverse it, or totally delete it as if it was never there. Mary Baker Eddy, beginning on page 114 and ending on page 117 of the textbook, provides us with four levels of consciousness. A clear understanding of these levels enables a quick orientation to where we begin to solve any problem in which we're confronted. That is extremely valuable, because most people, even experienced Christian Scientists, not only do not realize the importance of what is on page 146 of the textbook and 330, which I will refer to in a moment, but they have no idea that there is a definite structure to the practice of Christian Science, and Mary Baker Eddy assigns a very specific name to doing it. Page 146 of the textbook includes this statement: Divine Metaphysics. Divine Metaphysics is now reduced to a system, to a form comprehensible by and adapted to the thought of the age in which we live. This system enables the learner to demonstrate the divine principle upon which Jesus' healing was based, and the sacred rules for the present application to the cure of disease. And on page 330, she gives us very specific directions. When the 32 planks of the platform is understood, and the letter and the spirit bear witness, the infallibility of divine metaphysics will be demonstrated. Following a total of 11 pages, 330 to 340, are 32 specific topics that she refers to as the platform, and each topic is a plank. And notice that she uses a singular verb, is understood, but a plural, what appears to be a plural subject, the 32 planks, but 32 planks of the platform. So platform is really united with the 32 planks to provide one unified topic, and hence is the connecting verb, singular instead of plural. A very important element of the system of divine metaphysics are the four levels which are discussed specifically on page 115 and 116, but with the introduction and conclusion begins on page 114 at the bottom and goes through part of page 117. At this moment, as I am recording this, the home page has a special section for the four levels. And the quote from page 146 and 330 are also on the home page. And the four levels include three options for looking at three different parts of this whole topic. And they range from just the specific text on page 115 to 116, and both the introduction and conclusion, which would be 114 through mid-page of 117. And then also the entire section, which is section number one of the chapter. Chapter is entitled Science, Theology, and Medicine, and the first section is science. As a clue, I will tell you that there are four levels of consciousness. One is immortal. Three are mortal. And they are three different degrees from the lowest to the highest. All four are entitled scientific translations. It's like driving a car. You need to know what gear you are in and what gear is required in order to get the best efficiency out of the engine. When one is approaching a method to heal any kind of a problem, they need to do the same thing. Where the problem lies in the overall perspective needs to be discovered so that the most efficient way to heal it will be followed in accordance with a specific system and structure. Einstein had just an introduction to Mary Baker Eddy's works, and he kind of dabbled in it for a while, but not until he had a friend who was on the Atomic Energy Commission, last name of Underwood, had been the only one to survive the team of scientists that were working on the atomic energy, learning how to build a bomb and blow up civilization. And when Einstein discovered, through conversation with his friend Dr. Underwood, that his friend was the only one to survive the whole team and everyone else had passed on from radiation, he inquired, "How did you survive?" And Dr. Underwood very simply told him, "Through Christian Science, I'm a student of Mary Baker Eddy's works, and I studied it just as I would study any science, systematically, methodically, consistently, and persisted until the healing was complete." Well, that was a wake-up call to Einstein. So he started attending the church and spent time in the local reading room, which is a part of most churches, where he could study in quiet isolation the textbook. And he did so thoroughly. And after studying it, he made these comments. "Imagine, a woman discovered this 80 years ago. Now, she discovered Christian Science in 1866, so that would place it around 1946. He also said, "Blessed art thou," referring to Mary Baker Eddy, "because everything that is in this book." He also said, "You cannot solve a problem by approaching it to find a solution on the same level as where the problem appeared." Now, one might think that that level has to be much higher. And one of the most popular and successful honest journalists that is active right now and has been for the last approximately 30 years, when he interviews someone, he starts off by asking them to give the big view. I think he refers to 35,000 foot. Maybe it's 25 or 30. But he wants to see the view where you can see everything. And then he goes down to tackle the individual elements below. And of course, that's exactly what Mary Baker Eddy does. And she, of course, discovered this long before, maybe as much as 100 years, because these four levels to which was referred to earlier in this recording starts off at the top level and then drops to the lowest level and works up through 3 degrees, and then finally you would revert to the highest level again. So you want to begin and end at the highest level, but you've got to work at lower levels in order to solve the problem. Well, knowing that there is a solution because you've already had a view of the highest level. Frederick L. Rawson, a true genius, excelled in everything that he was involved in. He was asked by one of the leading newspapers in the UK to research Christian Science, and this was over 100 years ago, because they had reports that Christian scientists from America were able to heal just like Jesus did. They trusted him because they knew he was very successful as an international consultant for electrical problems, and they also knew he had a very strong attraction to study of the Bible. So they thought this would be a perfect combination of combining science and religion. He accepted the assignment, and because of his understanding of electricity, he measured the electrical charges within the body when the individual was having trouble, and then after they were healed, he measured it again. And he found that the electricity within the body had a very definite change. As a result, he ended up becoming one of the most successful practitioners of all time. As a little teaser, if you're not already interested, is that he discovered how to heal back in time. In other words, like the movie, Back to the Future. Again, this is covered on the website in two of his publications. You will likely be interested in reading the bio that we have on the website. Let's take a look at the components of the title to this prayer treatment. Contagious, true and false. If one views the Noah Webster 1828 dictionary, that it includes both reference to the common way in which that term is used, contagious, and it's a very negative thing about humanity. But there's also some very important other statements. One of them is, may excite like affections in others. His genius rendered his courage more contagious. So in other words, courage is a very positive trait, especially if it's connected to spiritual activities. Jesus had to have courage. He was attacked by everyone. Mary Baker Eddy, the same thing. The truth is attacked by evil, error, misconceptions, misunderstandings, all the time. And history is filled with the misery that was inflicted upon people who came forth with discoveries that were truth. But sometimes it took generations or even hundreds of years before the population would accept it. Fibonacci, a brilliant mathematician from Italy, when he discovered how the numbers explain a lot of things in nature and applied it to cycles and told the ones in charge of the country that they were going to have a very difficult time and told them when, he had nothing but trouble. That is exactly what's happening on planet Earth today. There are cycles. Short term, medium, long term. I mean, it's like an infinite number of degrees that have a cycle. One finds that pi in mathematics is a very significant number. So we know that contagious as a term does not have to be connected to evil, but it's anything where there is a relationship between one idea and individuals that examine the idea, and that what is discovered by one individual can be passed on by those who have a receptive thought, and the discoveries of one individual can be utilized to learn, internalize, and build on it for their own individual research. Instead of reinventing the wheel from the beginning, they can start from things that have already been discovered. And I must warn you that there is a universal law, and I'm totally convinced that it is universal and omnipresent, and that is the golden rule holds true for everyone all the time. So if one tries to steal an idea from someone else, as opposed to utilizing it with high morals, giving full credit to their sources, then that leaves the path open for them to further develop it or to individualize it for their particular purpose. To give you an example, I'm aware of the circumstances through study and inspiration of how the male ego has been so strong historically that it did not permit females from voting or owning property, nor were they provided the normal. In the days of Jesus, the Bible refers to him preaching on the hillside or teaching. In one case, a group of 4,000, and in another case, 5,000. And in both cases, it refers to men plus women and children, which means that the total was probably 4, 5, 6 times that much. Because of probably each man probably had a wife and children. So instead of talking to 4,000 or 5,000, say a total of 9,000 in those two particular circumstances, he was talking to a number of people that were 4, 5, 6 times that amount. But what did they do? Those 50 or 60,000 people that he was probably talking to. As everyone knows, one of his disciples took silver in exchange for helping to capture Jesus and bring him to trial and crucify him. Out of all those people that he taught, just in those two sessions, you would think someone would show up at the trial and the crucifixion. History about the life of Jesus may have not included him ever experiencing the trial or the crucifixion. He was at a spiritual level that he could have escaped both the trial and the crucifixion. But he came to the realization after communing with the one and only God that the public needed to see what happened, that they tried to kill the truth, but the truth was the winner. And that translates that they tried to kill the symbol of truth, Jesus. But Jesus resurrected and, after a probationary period, ascended. Totally overcame the belief of life, truth, and intelligence being in matter. But what happened on the island of Patmos? After John was exiled there, they tried to kill him. including putting them in a pot of boiling oil. That didn't work. Just like they tried to kill Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego by putting them in the fiery furnace. It killed the soldiers that were putting them in there because they apparently caught on fire. But not the three that were supposed to be consumed by the fire. So Jesus could have escaped the whole experience, but he knew that he had to go through it in hopes that it would enlighten society. And of course it did. John was the only disciple in which there was a lasting impact, because they didn't seem to be able to kill him, even putting him in a pot of boiling oil. So they exiled him to the island of Patmos. Jesus visited John on the island of Patmos, and of course that was after he ascended. And they never found John's body, so he must have ascended. These two items are covered by Dr. Robert C. Putnam, who is one of the finest Bible scholars next to Mary Baker Eddy, and likely Frederick L. Rawson, another one, Wentworth Winslow, Joel Goldsmith, all of which had 15-minute appointments, and at the end of that time, the patient was healed. So Robert C. Putnam wrote 10 Bible lessons. It's only, I think, 169 pages. But it's basically an index and summary of the Bible from beginning to end, pointing out all of the key characters and key events. And the bibliography is very extensive, hundreds of pages. And almost everything is strictly from the Bible. Referring back to the title of this prayer treatment, Contagious, True and False, the reason it's stated that way is because of the levels. Mary Baker Eddy writes on all four levels. So one needs to understand what level she refers to in order to understand what she's saying. I was an usher at a lecture one time on Christian Science. I was very young, just out of college. And after the lecture, one of the audience came up to me and said, "I'm happy with everything she says about Christian Science in the textbook, but there's two absolute opposite statements that I don't understand, and it looks like she made a mistake." He didn't have any clue about the levels. And of course, at that time in my life, I didn't either. So at one point, she may say, there is no life, truth, and intelligence in matter. And at another point, she talks about material man, a material human. An understanding of the levels totally clears that up. So, something that is contagious could be something good, and that would be true contagious. And something that is evil, as a student of Christian Science, we deny that that is real, but it is a misrepresentation, a misinterpretation of reality. Genesis chapter 2, starting with verse 4, begins the record of Adam and Eve. And at the very beginning, actually, it's verse 6. It says there went up a mist. Anyone who's been in a mist knows that the clarity is not as good as when there is no mist. At least not for us. Maybe for a fish, it doesn't matter. In fact, maybe a fish can't even see when he doesn't have water on his eyes. I don't know. If one thinks about a mist being the preface to the entire story of Adam and Eve, one is going to know that it's false. That no one can see clearly in a mist. What are we going to follow as we study in an effort to transform wherever we are in our level of spirituality to a higher level? It is extremely important to remove personality from any resource that we utilize. And the Bible is right up there at the top of the list, because it is mixed with a derivation for God that is inconsistent. If one studies Genesis chapter 1, which is the spiritual record, Elohim is the original word that was used for the word God. But then when the story of Adam and Eve comes up, which is after the mist is announced, it is not Elohim at all. And throughout the Bible, it switches back and forth between several different original words for God. So we have to make sure that we know what level is being discussed in the Bible. And if it's the first degree of mortal mind, that is depravity. And it is not God. God is the highest level, the highest spiritual, scientific translation of immortal mind that refers to man is not as an image of Adam and Eve. It's an image of the one true, pure God referred to in the record that is prior to the mist. Mary Baker Eddy, in advising us on page 126 of the textbook, where she says, "The Bible has been my only authority. I have had no other guide in," quote, "the straight and narrow way of truth." She provided us 16 other books. And she has made the statement that those other writings are a very important aid to understanding the textbook. One of those is entitled Message to the Mother Church, 1901. And this was provided to the church to be read as a part of the annual meeting in 1901. And she gave other ones also for that purpose. And one important thing she said in this one is, follow your leader only so far as she follows Christ. She's also quoted from an unpublished writing by her that says, follow my teachings only so far as they follow Christ's in word and deed. Now, that's in a book also on our website called The Blue Book, and that was compiled by Richard Oakes. The Golden Rule should be the center of everyone's thought, speech, and action. When Jesus was asked, "What is the most important commandment?" his reply was very direct, but you have to read it carefully. He says, "Love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. And the second is like unto it, love your neighbor as yourself." Isn't that telling us that the Golden Rule is loving God? Mary Baker Eddy has stated that the difference between success and failure is often how you use your moment. And a moment, of course, is generically defined as the smallest measurement of time. It can't be divided because it's not expressed in numbers. If we are working in an office and we're going to another individual's office because there's something we want to say, have we thought, am I considering everyone involved before I say anything? Jesus reduced his talk to very simple terms, and he made the statement that we should say yea, yea, and nay, nay. The motive is so very important. And if we're doing our best to follow the motto that Mary Baker Eddy established for the Christian Science Monitor, which was to bless all mankind and injure none, that's just another way of stating the Golden Rule. That's another way of stating what Jesus called the second commandment, which is like the first commandment, as he states in his own words. Imagine if everyone followed this kind of a very simple discipline in everything they thought, said, and did. Could there be any lack of anything for anyone? Or could there be any unfinished, wholesome project because of lack of perseverance? There are constant adjustments that we must be making. It's like flying an airplane. You cannot point the nose of the aircraft to where your destination is, because you're not operating in a vacuum. When one dives from a high diving board off of the water, one must be aware of the direction of any wind and the strength of it. Let's consider the seven synonymous terms for God. On page 465, which is chapter 14, the recapitulation chapter of the textbook, and that is summarizing chapters 1 through 13, which by definition is very important. She defines God as incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. four qualifying elements. One, no body. Two, perfect. Three, everything is less than God. God is the apex. And four, there is absolutely no limit to God. Now, what are the seven synonymous terms? Mind. Everything to do with mental. Spirit. The only substance. Soul. All sense. In other words, all identification. Principle. Structure. Always in balance. Always harmonious. Life. That's the active exercise of all the qualities of God. And it multiplies out into the universe of thought. Truth, no mistakes. It's like a train on a track that never gets off, never changes, always true. Never a mistake of any kind whatsoever. And love. Love is wholeness, completeness. Meaning that it includes the effective utilization of the other six synonymous terms. It nurtures everything about every other quality in order to bring it to fulfillment, completeness, wholeness. A mother, if she's a real mother, she's going to nurture every child to bring it to fulfillment. And what is a child? A child is something we all have because it's within consciousness. A very powerful thing to remember about mind is it is intelligence and wisdom and knowing and creative ability, capacity, capability, functionality, facility. Are we exercising those qualities of mind when we think about substance, which is spirit, and when we think about soul, which is identity, and principle, and life, and truth, and love? In other words, are we utilizing intelligence when we are exercising any of those qualities of God? How about when we're thinking? That's a mental activity. Are we exercising intelligence in our thinking? God is defined as omni-action. Are we exercising intelligence when we take any action whatsoever? And how about speech? Are we making wise decisions? Are we exercising the knowing of God? God knows all. Are we relying on the qualities of God for what we know? In other words, are we letting the knowing of God be our knowing? We certainly cannot be on a materialistic plane in any stretch of the imagination for anything we think, say, or do. We have to be looking through the lens of spirit. Otherwise, we're not able to see the truth about anything. We're not able to identify with proper seeing or hearing or smell, feel, taste, unless we're doing it on a spiritual basis. A dear longtime friend who was an excellent practitioner and her husband lived in a city that I was going to be visiting, and so I asked her if she had any time available, and she invited me to stop there. When I arrived, they were viewing the Olympics and invited me to join them. And gymnastics was the particular event that they were viewing. And the first comment she made as we were all three watching it was, "Look at the grace." She was immediately transforming any other thought that could have been materialistic to the spiritual viewpoint. That was what she was seeing, the grace. No matter what our experience includes, if we would transform any material so-called sense to the spiritual sense, then we're going to be in tune with exactly what God is. It's like an atmosphere that automatically exchanges things for spiritual thoughts, connects us to the angel message, the translation of what God is. Everything real is expressed in symbols. Are we digging below the surface to look for the symbol? Every time we do that, we are having our thought on God. If we do that consistently, we will find a totally different result in every thought, speech, and action than what we would have if we did not connect through the spiritual lens of real substance. The spiritual lens that is utilizing the perception of soul. Hearing, which is the second function of our senses, is understanding. We have a complete presentation on the website about the five spiritual senses. And you can find that page easily in the menu under topics. And it will start with the digit 5 for 5 spiritual senses. The Mary Baker Eddy Institute was founded in 1988. By William and Helen Wright. Helen blessed us with a book in the year 2000 that is entitled Your Divinity Revealed. In it, chapter 4 focuses on the synonymous term of mind, 5 on spirit, 6 on soul, and so forth through chapter 10. It is highly recommended that one read with great sincerity and thoroughness that entire book, because it helps understand what Mary Baker Eddy says when she refers to one of the seven synonymous terms. Everything from that book comes from the textbook and the Bible. It's recommended by the Institute that one read it from the very first page to the end, and then go back and read it from at least chapter 14 through chapter 10. There's an appendix that also discusses the system, which is the operators, which are the Word, Christ, Christianity, and science. Just like mathematics utilizes operators of add, subtract, multiply, and divide. So one needs to know how the operators interact with the elements of the seven synonymous terms, just like in order to provide a product from mathematics, you need to use an operator and apply it to the 10 digits of 0 through 9. The system of divine metaphysics is a very structured system that any two or more people that utilize the system according to the rules that have been discovered, they will all get the same result. Just like mathematics, it doesn't matter who does the multiplication or the add, subtract, or the dividing. If they abide by the rules of mathematics, they're going to come up with the same result. And the result in mathematics is a number. The result in the system of divine metaphysics is healing. We have a complete recommendation on how to proceed if you would like to explore Christian Science, which is the system of divine metaphysics, to provide to you the opportunity of a more spiritual life than where you are at this moment. And it doesn't matter where you are at this moment. That's an individual salvation that only you can translate, interpret, and exercise the rules for your own benefit. I will point out a couple of very simple basics in what is recommended. Number one, you have to have the atmosphere of the conclusion. And what do I mean by the conclusion? Thinking about mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, it was mentioned that love is a result of nurturing all the other qualities of God. That's the conclusion. That's the wholeness, the completeness. And so what do you do if you really are expressing spiritual love in your life? Are you taking from others and trying to get everything you can? Or are you giving and making a genuine effort to find people in need that are receptive and giving all you can? In other words, help others find a solution with you being involved and contributing whatever you're guided to contribute. Remember, everything is on a spiritual basis. Money is not a god. A house, a car, one's appearance, one's background, one's education, None of that, if looked at through the lens of matter, is of value. Love is not giving money unless money is something that is needed by the individual and is going to solve a problem, as opposed to an easy way to think you're helping someone and then just forget them. It's been said that money is the source of all evil, or the root of all evil. It's not any more the source of all evil than is a beautiful house. A gun is not the source of evil. What is the purpose involved? What is the motive? Do you feel you need to forgive someone? Have you ever thought that you must have condemned them? If you haven't condemned anyone, why would you be thinking about forgiving someone? God doesn't condemn anyone. If we do an evil act, we're condemning ourselves, because we're taking ourselves out of the realm of spirit. We're taking ourselves out of the realm of the protection of the universal laws that are the laws of God. Everyone has a choice as to what they do at any moment. Edmund Burke, about 200 or 300 years ago, is credited for a statement that applies to everyone all the time. Evil triumphs when good men do nothing. Think of men as being generic. Not male, not female, but everyone. In other words, one knows that there's a problem. They know or can find out what can help solve that problem, but they don't do it. They don't do what they know should be done. That's when evil triumphs. Evil is the winner. It doesn't have to do anything. It's what we don't do that lets evil be the winner. In Genesis chapter 1, verse 26, which is the spiritual record, not the material record, it's not the Adam and Eve record, it's the record based on God, derivation, which is Elohim. It says, and this is day 6 of the creation, it says, "And God said, let us make man in our image and likeness." And right after that it says in verse 27, "And so God made man in his image and after his likeness." Step one, we have to open consciousness to let ourselves be guided by the truth. And then the door is open for us to do it. We can't be the image and likeness of God if we're going to be focusing on things that are unlike God. We can't be that man that stands up when there's a need. Evil will triumph if we don't do our part. God helps those who help themselves. What does that mean? It means the laws of God are already established, and they are there with the full power of God behind them, and all we have to do is abide by the law. Are we loving our neighbor as ourself? That's abiding by the golden rule, what Jesus calls as the first commandment. The Bible says we cannot love the invisible without loving the visible. In other words, the symbol. If we cannot appreciate the beauty of a wonderful landscape or of a lovely rose or the fragrance of a lovely fragrant flower or anything else that is really a beautiful, perfect fragrance, are we recognizing the quality of God that we are exposed to? Are we only looking at it as a material object? Or are we seeking the spiritual symbolism? If someone does really a wonderful thing, do we recognize that that's the intelligence of God in action? If we do something that is successful, that helps everyone involved, do we recognize that as an action of God? Or are we letting our little ego take the place of God? The system of divine metaphysics is very simple. Each of the seven synonymous terms for God, which is tantamount to the nine digits of 1 through 9 plus 0, and mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, those are the digits that are used in the system of divine metaphysics. And if you don't think that you should be scientific in the way you conduct your life, what does Einstein say about it? Einstein says, religion without science is blind, and science without religion is lame. He said this after he gave serious study to the textbook, after he discovered from talking with his friend, Dr. Underwood, that he was healed from radiation and survived where everybody else was destroyed. They passed on as a result of the radiation. And after he studied the textbook thoroughly, he made these significant statements that have been shared with you. They're on the website. He's listed as an author. If you go to the E's in the alphabetical list of authors, everything's by last name, you will find him there. And his quotes. Are we totally satisfied with everything about our life? If so, there's no use even thinking about Christian Science, which is the system of divine metaphysics, because your thought's not going to be open to doing anything different than what you're doing. If you're totally satisfied, that's not anything of value. And of course, that's based on your present perspective. Dale Carnegie, one of the legends in how to be successful, said, never make a strong statement that is opposing someone you're discussing the topic with. He says, tomorrow you may be enlightened and take the opposite view, which is agreeing with the individual that you're having a discussion with today. That may or may not fit. But he was a very wise man. He made a wonderful statement about Mary Baker Eddy. He had to have his thought open to everything. Another quote from Einstein comes to thought. He said, curiosity has its own reason for existing. Never stop questioning. If you have a strong opinion about something, are you willing to search your own thought to make sure that you're looking from a spiritual viewpoint? Are you willing to look through the microscope and really look at the details? Or maybe you need to go up and take a 35,000 foot view where you can see more than just a myopic viewpoint would reveal. Everyone is to work out their own salvation. You can't work out mine. I can't work out yours. No one else can work out yours. No one else can work out mine. It's an individual demonstration, an individual salvation. Mary Baker Eddy is the only one that was able to get certified a college that she had on divine metaphysics that enabled her to award degrees to the graduates. She closed the college in 1898, and the final class were composed of students that she invited. On the third day of that class, she assigned each one the task of going out and healing someone and report on it the next day at the class. That was a requirement after the third day. Although, keep in mind, she selected her best students and they all came back and reported their success to the rest of the class the next morning. Everyone that attended that class was awarded the CSD degree, Doctorate of Christian Science. She provided that class 7 special prayers. She titled them Diapason of Heaven. If you look up the word diapason, it means compound concord. Each of the 7 terms were linked to a particular synonymous term for God. So there's one for mind, one for spirit, and so forth. I shall recite to you the Diapason of Heaven with a focus on principle. That will conclude this prayer treatment. And if there's any lingering thought that occurs to me during the reading of that prayer treatment by Mary Baker Eddy, it will be added after the word Amen. Also, the date and time will be included at the very end. Diapason of Heaven for principle. We must hallow this word principle as a name for God. Declare often there is only one principle, and that is my infinite, all-present, all-powerful, all-knowing, all-acting, all-loving principle. Principle is my God, and my God is divine principle. Good is my principle, and my principle is good. Divine principle is enthroned in my consciousness as my God. persons and personal sins are not enthroned. This is the Word of God. Declare all the truths you know about principle. Principle as God must be subjective in your consciousness. Claim this revealed principle as yours and as your subjective thought. This ever-operative, unvarying, enduring, governing, exhaustless, sustaining principle is enthroned. So-called mortal laws are inoperative and unreal. Amen. Yes, there is a thought that occurred while reciting that prayer by Mary Baker Eddy. Mary Baker Eddy devoted time every hour to examine her own thought to be sure that there was nothing that was criticizing anyone for anything, but that she only could think, say, and do what supported every individual as a child of God. Perfect, innocent, pure. This obviously involved separating person or personality from the truth about what Genesis verse 26 and 27 states about who man is as the image and likeness of God. Also, the home page recites the definition of man from the glossary of the textbook from page 591. This extemporaneous prayer treatment is on the topic of contagious, true, and false. It is February 13, 2026 at 12:37. Thank you for listening. The end.